everyone to DJM's Diversity Pod, and we are back here another week talking about another diversity topic. Now, if you do hear a little bit of the background noise, we are in a different location this time. So, new things are happening. Now, last week we spent some time talking about, you know, all those different types of biases, and let me tell you, there were a lot. Now, this week we are taking a little bit of a change. I actually have a guest with me, and by guest I mean colleague. I have the chance to sit down with Kyle, one of our talent acquisition executives, to talk about a very interesting topic this week. So hi Kyle, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. Noor, how are you doing?
Very well, excited to get going this week. So what are we talking about today?
Well, this week's topic is about meritocracy in the UK and whether it can ever be accurately measured. Now, the popular term for it is myth of meritocracy, because there's this general idea that that meritocracy can never be achieved. But what I wanted to talk about in today's podcast is, you know, is it really a myth of meritocracy or a misunderstanding of meritocracy? And can it be accurately measured, like I just said?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, before we get started, you know, some of you may not know what this word meritocracy means. So Kyle is actually going to take some time to break down the word so you guys understand what exactly we are addressing today.
I mean, the general idea of meritocracy is that someone should be, you know, compensated relative to their skills and achievements and, you know, get forward in life that way. I mean, I've got the, I actually have the dictionary definition of meritocracy up. And it's a noun, and it literally means a social system, society, or organization in which people get success or power because of their abilities, not because of their money or social position. Now, in the recruitment and talent acquisition world, obviously the most relevant word in that definition is organization, an organization in which people get success or power because of their abilities, not because of their money or social position. And in an ideal world, I think everyone would agree that people would get hired or people would, you know, achieve their goals purely based on their talent or merit and not because of accident of birth, like what socioeconomic background they come from, what other tangible characteristics they have, such as ethnicity or things like gender or sexual orientation and things like that. So what I'm aiming to discuss really is why, even though we have all these protections such as the Equality Act 2010 and other laws and other standards that aim to measure our workforce, such as GCSEs and A-levels, we have that standard, gold standard of assessing them.
So what we've got here is, you know, the government have put forward legislation, you know, to afford all these workers like us protections. Yeah. But what we come to realise, and especially like in the past podcast, we've talked about female health, we've talked about abilities and accessibility needs and how they are addressed within the workplace. Just because legal legislation has been put in place to afford people protection doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be protected. Now, Kyle, you spent a lot of time in your blog choosing to dwell on state and privately led education. Why do you think that this is so important to this week's theme?
Well, because only a small minority of people are privately educated, yet a large number of them are in senior positions or achieve more in life. Like, I think one of the percentages in the article is that 39% of those in leading professions are from private school backgrounds, but they only represent 7% of the population, according to ITV News. So I think it's important to address that there are certain socioeconomic barriers that mean certain people in society get more advantages than others.
So some of the examples are, you know, people can actually be penalised from where they got their degrees from. Non-Russell Group versus Russell Group universities is a big one, where certain students are afforded higher pay because they have chosen to go to a more, you know, in quotations, reputable university. There is also a big gap between students who choose to get a degree or not. And in an age or an era where you are actually able to get skills without necessarily going to university and getting a degree. This is an interesting dynamic where certain students and school leavers are not afforded the same advantages as those who get a degree, especially when they are equally specialized and have qualifications or skills or experience that would match that of a degree-holding individual.
Yeah, I mean, with regards to Russell Group universities and getting positions at more reputable brands, you might make the argument that it's actually illegal for them to discriminate against certain protected characteristics, and that everyone has the opportunity to go to Russell Group universities or work at, I don't know, a big four firm. You always hear news stories about that one person that grew up in a single mum family in a council estate and now is the CEO of some next brand, having been an Oxbridge graduate. But what people don't seem to realise is that for a lot of these people that have access to, a lot of people that end up at these reputable universities or get a higher advantage in education, it's normally their socioeconomic background and other influences that make them more likely to, you know, pursue this. And also, there's also this, I don't know, I suppose there's this nuance that, you know, parental background influences like what their children will do because they have the resources and probably the skill set to guide their children, whereas someone from, I don't know, a poorer background or, you know, less access to this, it might be alien to them, if that makes sense. And obviously with the research that I've referenced in the blog post, it's interesting that this happens more in the UK, France, and the United States of America than in other European countries, such as like the Scandinavian world. Like there, over there, it seems that a child's education, regardless of what background they come from, has more of an effect of what they do later on.
So one of the big questions that, you know, people are going to come away from when reading your blog is going to be, you know, what do you think really goes on behind the scenes with UK's so-called meritocracy?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the real answer to that is nobody really knows. However, it would be naive to suggest that systemic barriers and systemic injustices don't stand in the way of people getting through in the workforce. Like, unconscious bias is still very much a thing. And access to education, like I've said earlier, is still, you know, there's still a gap between the rich and the poor in how they get that. And even a gap in, you know, certain ethnic minorities, if you like, that have these opportunities.
So you guys are going to be familiar with that term, unconscious bias. It comes back again and again. And one of the things that Kyle touches upon in his blog article is how actually the training can be wildly ineffective in the manner that just because, you know, you can put forward psychological tests or training and do coaching for an individual who has shown to have some sort of unconscious bias, there is no guarantee that the tests submitted are not going to have submission or selection bias within the sample itself, picking multiple choice questions that may seem that they are not indicating any bias. And the thing is, just because somebody is coached or trained to try and mitigate their unconscious bias, the issue is when it is something that is so unconscious, they may not even realize that in the moment that they are doing it. So how are they going to catch themselves out in that moment? So it's an interesting dynamic to think about. Even when we are trying to mitigate the effects of certain biases that can have an effect on looking at candidates through meritocracy, it means that when these methods are ineffective, then it puts everything out of balance. So we talk about drawing the line of networking. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, with regards to meritocracy, I've also touched upon the idea of nepotism, despite not blatantly using that word. So this goes back to my point about the divide between the rich and the poor. In other European countries, the culture of nepotism is quite rare, whereas in the UK it's quite commonplace for young people to get internships and placements based on familial connections, like, you know, their mum's best friend works in one of the coveted investment banks and they've managed to get a job there, and that's more likely to be applicable to someone from a middle class background. And also another thing that I found really interesting is the idea of unpaid internships. This isn't about networking, but still. Again, this is likely to be more accessible to someone that has the privilege of relying on their parents and not really having to worry about fending for themselves. Whereas, like, a lot of graduates, especially if they live in London, because there's lots of opportunities in London, but some graduates, some young people don't have that luxury and need to desperately fend for their families. So already, a lot of young people with unpaid internships are being afforded opportunities that can't really be accessible to the younger generation. And that's why, on another note, unpaid internships is another unproblematic thing that, you know, hinders the idea of meritocracy in the UK.
I absolutely agree with the comment that was made about unpaid internships. You know, you have to value the labour that people put forward, and having something that is valuable like an internship that is unpaid is incredibly and disproportionately biased towards people who come from poorer socioeconomic backgrounds, simply because they cannot afford to take unpaid work because they have certain financial responsibilities, possibly even financial burdens that they might have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in a way there's nothing wrong with utilising or maximising your privilege to get far in life, as long as you don't pretend that it was purely merit and talent that got you that far, if that makes sense. And I mean, it's human nature. If you have the privilege to go for something to better yourself, you're going to want to go for it, no matter how problematic it might be. So I suppose it's not the fault of the people that go through that. It's the way the system works which allows that to happen. So I think that needs to be looked at as well.
So in the blog post, you talk at length about the Nordic model of social mobility. Now, you compare it to the UK.
Yeah.
So what do you think the UK has something to learn from this model?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose when you compare like different nations to each other, I think it's impossible to have a like for like model, because I think cultural differences definitely come into play. So I think the Netherlands and other Scandinavian, well, Netherlands isn't. So in other European countries, such as Scandinavian countries like Norway, Denmark, and other, you know, forward-thinking European countries such as the Netherlands and Austria, they have a culture of, you know, big government and the fact that the rich should help the poor. And that's why, and this is reflected in their high tax economies and, you know, the socialist policies at work and in society. So I think, and there's a big push for this in other countries with more, if you like, right-wing governments. They're like, you know, look at Sweden, look at Norway. If they can do it, so can we. But it's interesting because I also raise a point in the article that these countries have a relatively low population, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 million compared to the UK's 67 million. So one may question whether it's perhaps harder for the UK to manage, you know, social mobility than it is for those countries. But no, I think definitely the UK could be doing more to mitigate against, you know, the underprivileged, they should be doing more to mitigate against the gap between the privileged and the not so privileged, so to speak. Because, like I said, there is evidence to suggest that a child's education level in those countries have a bigger effect on the outcome, which is better than in the UK, where it's more parental background that has a bigger influence on how a child succeeds in life. Like, there's a statistic that British men with the same education level as other British men are 20%, earn on average 20% less than their counterparts if their parents didn't go to university than if their parents did. Whereas that's not quite the case in other countries such as, you know, the Scandinavian world. But then another thing that I found really interesting about the Nordic model is the idea that quotas are quite popular to narrow the gap. And again, quotas are quite problematic because there's evidence to suggest that they only solve problems at a superficial level and doesn't account for intersectionality. And I think that quotas solve the problem, you know, in getting more women, especially, and mm-hmm. more women into the workforce, but
it works on a superficial level, I think. It doesn't necessarily work at a deeper rooted level. Yes, it looks good for branding,
yeah,
image, marketing, but whether it is actually something that is going to flip the switch on workplace discourse and behaviours and attitudes towards yeah. other people is something that is wildly going to be put into question.
So, I mean, I think it can never be perfect, but it's definitely something that should be thought about, especially as, you know, the majority of Western Europe have this reputation of being, you know, this utopia with, you know, and they're big on social mobility as well, so to speak.
So just finally, as an endpoint, for some of you who are students and are looking for certain social mobility programs to join, a lot of universities are starting to implement programs, and this was mandated by the state. There are other organizations that are not-for-profit or NGOs, such as the Sutton Trust, where you can go and actually get university experience prior to going to university to see if it will be a good fit for you. Certain workplaces are now introducing, up until March, for students 16 to 25, the Kickstarter scheme, which DJM is also a part of, where if students are, you know, at threat from long-term unemployment, this is something that can actually boost your skills to help you enter the workforce in a much more confident manner.
Yeah, I think that those initiatives are quite good at levelling the playing field. I mean, even the Kickstart scheme, even that's not perfect because they pay minimum wage at 25 hours and that's not necessarily good for someone that needs to pay rent and needs to live on their own, especially if they live in London.
Yeah, I agree with that. London is expensive.
We need to try harder, basically, mitigating against these effects of lack of meritocracy.
I think one of the most important things here is the state can release legislation, they can release mandates on making certain styles of recruitment illegal or, you know, problematic, or they can put forward state-led social mobility programs. But the problem is, just because those mandates are put in place doesn't necessarily mean that private institutions and organizations are going to follow through and actually work on making their workplaces, as a big one, more accessible to those who, a big one here, is are less socioeconomically fluid.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually against the law to discriminate against someone based on a protected characteristic. And obviously, it's going to be obvious if you discriminate someone in a conscious way. But I think that companies should be doing more to be more aware of the nuances of intersectionality and, you know, the different struggles that people go through in life because of accident of birth, basically.
So, to end on this final question, is meritocracy a myth?
Well, I mean, the popular belief, again, is that meritocracy is a myth because of the systemic injustices that stand in the way of meritocracy truly being practiced. And as I've discussed earlier in the podcast, it's still not perfect in other nations that are supposed to be the happiest in the world, such as in the Scandinavian world. However, from my personal point of view, is that I wouldn't say it's a myth. I'd say it's something that needs to be measured differently, and it needs to be, there needs to be more of a discussion on it. Like, another thing that I found interesting is that how do we even measure merit? Like, what is it? Like, when we think of someone that has merit or has succeeded in life, we think of people in higher paid positions, you know, with lots of money and lots of wealth and lots of power. However, I think during the pandemic of 2020, and obviously there's still a pandemic now, but when the first lockdowns came, became implemented, it really opened our eyes to the importance of people in blue collar occupations and manual labour workers and people like that, because they really are the backbone of society. Like, no, I think a lot of people started to realise how much they really rely on delivery drivers, you know, things like that. And again, like, they, you know, they're quite important as well. And they get mistreated at worst and ignored at best. So I think that's another thing that we need to address. But to round it off, I think it just needs to be measured differently, and we just need to open our eyes a bit more. I wouldn't agree that it's purely a myth, if that makes sense.
All right, everyone, I want to thank Kyle for taking the time to sit down with me today and have this chat on meritocracy. It was absolutely lovely for me, but also for you guys, because you didn't have to listen to me drone on for about a half an hour. It's a nice change for you guys too. So we also have a blog on this topic. You can find it on the DJM site. This will be posted on all our social media outlets. You know the drill, guys. Like, comment, share, listen to it, download it. We would love to hear your thoughts on what we have to say. And you don't necessarily have to agree with everything that we're saying. It's interesting to get your voice out there. Now, this has been Noor and Kyle this week. And this has been DJM's Diversity Pod. And we will be seeing you next week.